Hello, everyone. You just tuned in to Set for Success with Richard Lannon, and we're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do that through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their career, their successes, their journey to help you create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. Now, if you listen to my show, you know I love quotes. I actually probably Google a quote every day. I try to find something inspiring. Not always. Sometimes it's just about a topic that I'm interested in. And this is the one that came across my my desk or my screen today. There has been a quantum leap technologically in our age. But unless there's a quantum leap in human relations, unless we learn to live in new ways towards one another, there will be a catastrophe. And that comes from Albert Einstein. Now, please tell me you know who Albert Einstein is. But if you don't, that is okay. Albert Einstein was a physicist. I hope I got that correct. Who developed the general theory of relativity. Relativity. I'm going to have problems with my words today. Later years, he focused on unified field theory. Now, we're not going to be talking about that stuff today, so you don't have to worry too much about that. But as I read that quote, I thought, how insightful. You see, Einstein died in 1955. Yet he's talking about technology and human relations. I bet you if you listen to that quote, you probably thought it came from somebody present today, like a Gates or somebody along that lines. So I figured it is actually quite relevant for our time. It got me thinking about conflict. You know, words, the conflict, and multitude levels of conflict, especially in people relations portion, and the various things that we are so super aware of in our world today. Conflict between people has exploded. Now, this is my opinion. At a click of a button, we can automatically be transported into conflict. It doesn't take that much anymore. Maybe you're aware more of conflict in its various faces because you use technology from where you work or where you live. Let's face it, you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you're on LinkedIn, you're on Instagram. I mean, all of these things, if you look for it, there's going to be conflict. And let's add in the media there too. I mean, it doesn't take much to turn on our television sets and boom, right there it is, even in our favorite TV shows. It has always been there, but maybe we just never said anything. Or maybe it was norm not to say anything. It was inappropriate not to say something. So, for example, you're a tattletale. You rat. Oh, you whistleblower, you. Yeah. All these things as children we grew up with, teaching us to hide from the truth, hide behind our closet doors or closed doors, behind institutional policies, hide somewhere in the shadows. Just maybe somewhere where somebody can't not see us. Maybe you're thinking that's because you hide and it's all right, but not stepping out, not dealing with the issues at hand of conflict. So here's the scoop today. I want to unearth some issues around conflict and what it's related to. And so as of today, I'm going to talk a little bit on Set for Success, her journey. We're going to speak on conflict. We're going to be taking on a multitude of levels. Could be workplace bullying, sexual harassment, toxic workplaces, and so on. I think they're just all related. So you could say we're going to let the show organically explore these issues. So as I gave the show some thought, some wondered, I sort of thought to myself, who could we, you and I, hang out with today that could dig deeper into this topic? So I went onto the internet and I searched and I came across this person by name of Sherry. Now Sherry's going to introduce herself, but she's a former RCMP officer who worked in the profession where I guess conflict is at the heart of things. Think about it. If you were a police officer, that sounds like a profession that has a lot of conflict associated with it. Turns out she's also an author of a book, Women Not Wanted, which chronicles 20 years in the RCMP and is part of the Senate National Security and Defense Committee, leading to the report Study on Harassment in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Truly a person who stepped up and out to create change in our society so we can all be a little bit more set for success. Sherry, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Richard, for having me.
I'm really excited that you're here. Even though I tripped over a few things in my monologue.
That's okay.
You know, I'm probably just a little bit anxious myself. Sherry, you know what? I actually didn't say your last name, and I apologize. I just realized it. What's your last name?
It's Sherry Benson-Podolchuk. If you were having trouble with a few words, that would have really caught you up a bit.
Oh, no doubt. Would have caught me. Definitely. You know, I sometimes laugh at myself when I start going through my monologue because I'm aware of the fact that sometimes, you know, you get rushed in things and then you start, your breathing goes off and away you go. So hopefully everything worked out. Sherry, I'd like to take this opportunity just for you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. We can talk about yourself personally, a little bit about your background, where you're from. And really, I know that you've been 20 years in the RCMP, so we can talk about that too. So Sherry, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. First, I'd like to just, your quote made me, when I was listening to you explain that, a quote came to my mind that even our darkest hours has only 60 minutes, and that's by Morris Mandel.
Oh, okay.
And I like that because I can lump my experiences with the RCMP and many experiences on a personal level outside the RCMP as having a darkest hour, and how we deal with that really has a lot to do with our attitude. So let's go back in time. I was a single mom with a small daughter when I joined the RCMP with the hopes of building a very successful career. Her father was an RCMP. We were no longer together, but we were friends. And I really thought I like the idea of a creative job. Every day is different. You're dealing with many different people. And I have this tremendous capacity of being very curious and also compassion. Those are two things. I think curiosity, compassion, and common sense, the three C's, are sort of what makes a really good police officer. And quite often you have to use your compassion more often than you have to use your common sense. However, when I went through training was really enjoyable. I didn't have any problems with that. It was always mind games, you know, invisible dust, doing 10-to-1s and boot camp and fitness and push-ups in drill, things like that, which was lots of fun. And one particular example, when I was in training, you listeners can't see, but I have a big set of teeth. And I have a hard time not smiling or giggling when someone says, you have to be serious. So I start to giggle.
Okay.
And in training, in drill, our instructor's walking up and down the two rows of 22 women and 10 men. And I'm trying desperately hard not to giggle. And as soon as he comes to me, he's got these beautiful piercing blue eyes, and he gets really close to me, so our noses are almost touching. And I'm thinking really serious thoughts, you know, and all of a sudden I start to giggle. And he goes, break ranks, which means step out of line. And then I had to go and do 10-to-1s, which means I run to all the way to the end of the gym and I do 10 push-ups. I run all the way to the other end. I do 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, all that. And my boots are all scuffed. My hair's it was really short. I'm red faced. My uniform's all messed up. I get in line. I'm breathing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, are you done giggling? And I started to giggle. And I said, I guess not, Corporal. And he said, another set.
Yeah. So by the time you were done, you were in shape.
I had to do 10-to-1s every day for, I think, the 6 months. And it's okay. They sort of accepted that I was going to giggle or smile. And that was just part of what I enjoyed.
Part of your natural.
And yes, I really developed a big set of pipes. But so I left training and I went to a small town, Saskatchewan. And I thought pretty much, you know, we were told corporals and, you know, to respect our ranks and never to question. And we were taught about officer safety and different things like that. So going into the field was completely different. I was really left on my own quite a bit. My instructor was just about to retire.
So what we'll do, we'll take a short break. When we come back in, we'll talk about the difference in going through training versus going out in the field. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Sherry. Sherry's slowly becoming my new best friend. I know I usually say that on my show. Thanks, see, I got
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Giggle. Now, we were talking just before our break about your career. I just love that sort of, I'm going to call it RCMP boot camp. That's the term I'm going to use. I don't know if that's what it's called today. But you placed me in the gymnasium. Like when you were talking about giggling and having somebody speak to you and then running back and forth, you just placed me there, which was absolutely awesome. But then you started to talk a little bit about your first experience in the field. So you're now a brand new RCMP officer. You're placed somewhere in Canada and you're out in the field. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Richard, it was a real... It became a reality that training was fun. I mean, everything's very is structured and regimented. And all of a sudden, my daughter is back living with me because I had my sister taking care of her. And my daughter, who's four, is back with me. So I'm working shift work. I'm trying to find babysitters. I am the mother, father, dishwasher, everybody in one, and working shift work. So it was very, very stressful, but I managed. What I wasn't prepared for was the culture that was already deeply embedded, that was something that we never discussed in training. We were told that to always obey the law, that the law was sacrosanct,
of course.
To never lie.
Yeah, and you know what? I can relate it from on a personal level. I grew up in a small town. RCMP were the only police officers, and we were taught to respect the RCMP, right? And so I get it. from that perspective. Sorry.
Oh, absolutely. And my daughter's father was an RCMP officer, so that's how I got to see a little bit more of the inner dynamics of what the work was like, and that's why I was so attracted to it, and plus the compassion part. So for me, it was instantly, within a few months, I was experiencing some, what they would refer to as hazing now, which would be name calling. And I, you know, they call me Barbie sometimes, or because I had blonde hair and, you know, I had big teeth. I was referred to as Chiclets once, you know, because I have these big teeth. And I never really thought of that as being harassment. I never really thought of it until the words became more sexually degrading. And I won't say that on the air because I don't know who's listening, and I would like to be respectful of people's boundaries and any triggering. So at first, I was totally shocked. I didn't know what to do. There I am. These senior officers are calling me these names. One of them is my supervisor, so he's in charge of my performance assessment every year. So I was really reluctant of what to do. And I thought, okay, I'll do what your parents say. Just ignore it. But guess what, my friends? If nobody speaks up, if nothing changes, workplace bullying, workplace harassment only escalates to violence and gets worse, which is exactly what happened. It didn't happen quickly. It happened in stages. Mm. And so I went to I went to each one of them out of respect and privately said, please don't call me those names. I'm feeling humiliated. Now people in the community are calling me these names. I am losing my ability to be a police officer because they are degrading me. They are not looking at me as someone, as a person in authority as I'm arresting them, which could cause some serious problems. And safety. They laughed and it continued. So I went to my boss and he laughed and said, well, maybe you enjoy the attention. And the message there and the message to everybody in a leadership role is that when you don't do anything, you are sending a clear message that this is a bullying workplace. This is a bullying organization, and anybody is fair game. Because guess what? If nobody says anything, nothing changes. And for me, nothing changed. And the violence, the harassment, and the sexual harassment just it escalated.
As you move through your career.
As I moved through this detachment, and then it changed to organizational bullying for the rest of my career.
Okay, so can you explain that a little bit? Like, what's first of all, I'd like to know what organizational bullying is, because I don't think I do understand that concept.
Well, I call it. That's a good question. And so, there was individuals who were bullying as well, and where you use positions of power and retribution, retaliation for speaking up. That was the biggest thing I ever did, was I spoke up and said, please don't treat me that way. I want to be treated equally. You have policies in place. You have to follow them for everybody. You can't pick and choose. The men you follow policies for men, but you don't have the same policies for women. You can't do that. That's why we have policies. So organizational bullying was the culture within the organization that allowed the bullying to continue. So even though I went up the ladder in ranks, all the way to the commissioner, it continued because the top was the same way. We have a perfect change right now. We have a new commissioner. She's a woman and she's got lots of experience. And I'm hoping that the message will be clear, and as it filters down slowly from layer to layer to layer, right down to the frontline officers, because that's what I was, that the message will be clear that this is going to be a workplace where it's respectful, where people are included, it's okay to make a mistake, because Richard, we all say the wrong thing. We all can laugh at a joke that was, well, maybe that was a little bit racist. Maybe that was too sexist. Oh, I didn't think about it that way, but now I am. So please don't say those jokes in our workplace.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't change people, but you can make it uncomfortable for the bully.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard anybody express it that way, that you can't change people, but you can make it uncomfortable for the bully itself. I am going to just share a little story. I get this one a lot of times. I was born in Newfoundland, right? And I get this from people all the time. I'm very comfortable telling people where I was born. Mm-hmm. But then if I say, and I don't want to undermine your story, but if I say I'm from Newfoundland, oh, you're a Newfie. Do you want to hear a Newfie joke? And I often say no, and they tell it to me anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You shouldn't have apologized. I only share it because I guess I'm trying to find a commonality, because you mentioned about, you know, just even those jokes are a form of bullying within the workplace itself. Yeah.
That's right. And sometimes we can laugh at a joke and not realize until later when you think about it, wow, that was not a very nice joke. That was a small person joke. That was a fat person joke.
I think that was my point. I think that's what I was trying to get to.
You know what I mean? And that's a Catholic joke. That's an Irish joke. Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe always assume there's someone in the audience who might take offense, and then scale it back.
Then roll it back. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Sherry. We've been talking a bit about her experience in RCMP, her initial career as a single mom and kicking that all off and the challenges, and then also just experiencing an organizational culture of bullying and what that means. Do you have some examples of bullying you can share with us? You probably wrote about it in your book a little bit, Women Not Wanted. Can you provide us a few examples?
Sure. And I always like to say that there are more good officers than there were bullies. It only takes one or two in a workplace. And if you are unfortunate, it just happened to be the way it happened that I went from place to place and I experienced workplace bullying. And
away you go. I often say to my clients or when I'm speaking that life is almost the perfect bell curve. And if you look at a bell curve, let me explain. Everybody's in the middle, right? And then there's the two small extremes at the end. And whenever you're faced with, if we talk about bullying, right, in this case here, if you think about a bell curve, pretty much everybody's going to be sort of in between. But then you always have the people that just take it too far or extreme, right?
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
You always have the people that have nothing to do with any, it's really a bit smaller, right? But for the most part, we're just good middle-class Canadians that make mistakes.
I think so. We're the polite nation, that's
sure.
Not always that's perfect, but we're trying.
Yeah. And then you have extremes in between and stuff. Sorry, it's just the way I look at our world. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead. Tell me a little bit about
it. So this would be a classic example. So when I, in my first detachment, I really liked enforcing open liquor and looking for impaired drivers. And one particular night, I had about 5 tickets, which was, you know, a lot of revenue for the province. It was very good evening for me. And instead of saying, well, good work, all I got was, well, you didn't dot this I, this T wasn't crossed. And then another time where They thought it was funny that I came to work one day and I went to use the ladies' bathroom and the screws had been loosened on the wooden stall door. And so it was an evening shift and there was women, two secretaries there who were in and out of there all day. And so when I used it, opened up the door, it fell off the wall and landed on my face and split my forehead and knocked me out and gave me a concussion. And I still have problems with my neck to this day. And so I was off and I came back 3 days later and I went to get my gun out of my gun locker, and inside my gun locker was my blue gym bag and with a dead prairie chicken with blood dripping all over my personal things. Now, I didn't see like I mentioned previously how bullying can escalate into violence. And now that I took that in retrospect, when I went home for Christmas and I came back and I realized this is violence. But you know what? When you are immersed in it, it becomes an everyday occurrence. It becomes normalized. You almost accept and you really start to believe there must be something wrong with Sherry. Everybody else seems to be fine. Why am I the only one? Is this happening? There must be something wrong with me. And that really messes with your mind. And that's how your mental health starts to break down slowly.
I don't want to undermine what you're saying because I can see your point, I guess is what I'm thinking in my mind. I'm thinking, you know, if you got a gym bag with a bloody chicken in it versus violence, you know, you might not think of that as violence. Like, I think when people hear violence, they think physical violence, somebody punching you or something, right?
Yeah. That's absolutely right. But when that is a form of intimidation, and I looked at it after as something as violence. And when people, you have to name it. You have to, if you put a name to it, this is what it was. It was violence. It was intimidation. And you just don't treat your employees like that. And the management, once again, when I spoke up, they did nothing.
Yeah, they failed. At what point in time did you? At what point in time did you make the shift from feeling it was about you? Maybe it's about you versus calling it something, labeling it. At what point did you have that realization that no, this is violence. This is not right.
Well, it was my first attachment. I realized I can't have my daughter here.
Okay.
And even though I tried to rectify the situation in my workplace by asking for a transfer, and I wrote about it. They didn't want to do it. It almost like this is your problem. You have to fix it. When in fact it was leadership. The leadership didn't do anything to try and rebuild the confidence of the team. And I think people. This was where. You know, learning how to deal with workplace conflict really is important. Why is it that you can be mad with your wife or your partner and your children and you forgive them and you move forward? But at work, when I just asked them not to call me those humiliating names, they never forgave me. Mm. That was all I did. I said, please don't call me those names and we can move forward. They never got over it. And so when you're always angry at somebody, and you never deal with those issues, it's always just under the surface. So anytime I might have done something wrong, that anger, that resentment, that bitterness comes spurting out like a volcano. Mm. And so their reaction would be an overreaction. Their behavior would be accentuated of what they're thinking, what they're doing, how they respond. So instead of saying, oh, well, you just missed something here, it's a big nasty note.
Yeah. Okay. So then that way it gets a little bit prolonged, I guess. Is that a good word to use?
Yeah, that's so true. When you're unable to move forward, you can't have one foot behind you and one foot forward and trying to think you're going to move. You have to decide, are you going to live in that pain, you know, being angry at somebody, or are you going to move forward? And how does that look? It'll look differently for everybody.
Now, how did that, and you tell me if this is a good sort of stepping piece into this topic, how does that move into sexual harassment? Because we've been talking about bullying, and then I know that you speak on, and your book does have this sexual harassment component to it.
So the sexual harassment was not only the name calling, but then any time I went to parties, and that's pretty much carried through almost a lot of my career. You know, they have a few drinks. They think it's okay to push you up against the wall and kiss you. They think it's okay to flirt with you. They think it's okay to ask you all sorts of questions about what's your sex life. I was single for a long time. And so they would ask what about my sex life. And I just say, that's none of your business. But they would have this conversation about my sex life in front of me while I'm sitting in the office and there's two of them talking. I just ignored it. No matter how disgusting it became, I just ignored it, and it continued. They thought it was funny, and if I was in the car with not all of them, like I say, not all of them, but
them,
the odd one, they would be
inappropriate
comments and inappropriate leaning over in the you know, looking for a kiss, and oh, that was really stressful, and don't you want a hug, and it's not right for a girl not to have sex, you know, things like that. And that was not the way I planned on my career when I joined. That's not what I come to work, I look at them like my brothers. I wouldn't talk to my brothers like, or my dad like that. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to talk to you like that about my private life?
It's interesting that you would say this. So you're making me think about a lot of things, but you mentioned about the last part about you look at it like your brother or like your dad. I was talking to a male friend of mine just recently, and we were talking about this topic about sexual harassment and in the workplace. And he said, you know, he actually asked me, Richard, how do you look at relationships between people, because you got a lot of relationships with men and women. I'm very comfortable. I said, very simple. I figured out a long time ago that if I just treat every woman like my sister and every man like my brother, a nicer form, I'm okay. And as I've gotten older and I've had kids, I've realized that, these are my hints, right? That if you treat every younger woman and younger man as your son or daughter, then you should be able to keep it in perspective. That was my
No, I think that's absolutely right, because people are really struggling, especially with the Me Too movement.
Yeah, yeah,
with
for
you know
that in.
From rape to just making an inappropriate sexual joke, it's a trauma for each person, and no matter how the extent or what happened to them, they still want to be able to say Me Too. It's still very traumatic, and I think it's really important that if we can find a balance of understanding that people can make a mistake. If they're a mistake, you make
first, okay.
First time is a mistake, second time's a coincidence, third time's a pattern.
Okay. Okay, with that thought in mind, we're going to have to take a short break, and I think I'd like to come back and talk a bit about that. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. I'm coming back, Set for Success with Sherry, but you know that. Now, we were talking a bit about a heavy topic, and I've been trying to relate to it a little bit. We were talking about workplace bullying. We were talking about sexual harassment. One of the things, Sherry, that you said just before we took a break, and I really love the words, and hopefully I get it correct. First time's a mistake, second time's a coincidence, and third time's a pattern. Is that something you've learned as a police officer? Or where did you pick that up from?
Well, it was more of an observation, but it was from my cousin Ray in Gimli. We were talking about sexual harassment, and after the Me Too movement came up, and Harvey Weinstein was, he was saying he didn't do it, and all of a sudden there's hundreds of people. Well, there's a problem here. Obviously, but now we got... I think every woman, man and woman, who says they've been assaulted needs to be believed. And then the police do their investigation, and anybody who's not less than truthful, they find them right away. Yeah. There are usually mental health issues involved with that anyway. But most people, when they talk about Me Too, it's their reality.
Okay. Did you want to speak on the Me Too movement?
Yes, I really do. It's taking me a long time to be able to publicly talk about it. And I think when people do talk about sexual assault and rape, it's empowering. So what I might say might be triggering for someone in the audience. And the idea is to, pull over, take a few moments, few breaths, and just realize if you need to speak to somebody, there's all sorts of sexual assault clinics out there that you can use. In Winnipeg, you just have to go to Google, and there's many places. So it happened to me when I was in Tisdale. Somebody broke into my home. I was out partying with some friends, and I had been drinking. Someone came into my home, and I remember waking up, and there was someone in my bedroom, and all I could think of was my daughter. I can't say anything. I can't make any noise. I have an old lady landlord downstairs. He's a big person, and I wrote about this in my book, the fact that I could see part of his face, and I recognized him as someone who had beaten up his girlfriend. And so I was even more frightened for if Nadine woke up, and thankfully Nadine didn't wake up, and he left, and I did what most victims do. I had a bath, scrubbed my skin, and pretended everything was fine and went to work. And, when you don't deal with whatever emotions you repress about that type of violation, it spits out in your life. It comes out in unhealthy behaviors, and that's exactly what I did. I had unhealthy relationships. I chose unhealthy people. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because I want to help other women and men not to make those same mistakes. And we learn from each other. We're here to learn lessons and then share so that other people don't have to suffer like we did.
Can you provide maybe some tips under this situation that would actually help other people get through it?
Well, for me, because it was when I disclosed later in life, I had a very good counselor. We worked through it. I, went on relationship fast and learned how to really value who I was. I created my own self-care toolkit. Pretty much in Tisdale, I started it with just a few tools, painting my nails every Thursday, which I still do now. Just little things that I could do for myself that were empowering for me, that made me feel strong, that make you feel strong, so that I could go back and face another day, another week, another month, another year in the workplace. So I think it's really important that if you remember something's happened to you, or you're willing to remember it because it's a traumatic thing. Most people just stuff it down there and think, okay, if I don't think about it, it's gone, and it's not. It's always back there in your computer. Remember, you can never completely delete a computer. Your forensic files will find it.
Okay, it's a good interesting
way to put
it.
So you need to deal with it. And once you deal with it, it really is empowering. It really is empowering.
What was the journey like? I think often we throw the word around, deal with it, like almost loosely.
Oh, I know, and that's
like change,
oh,
right? Just
boy.
Deal with it, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we meet it in a nice way, right? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's sort of like it's a harsh thing. But what was the journey like for you to, and I'm going to use the words deal with it, so it's more of a timing thing, like how long did it take you to sort of go through that journey?
For the whole, well, for the, I actually, you know, Richard, I'm still on it.
Okay, fair
enough. If I look back, I look back on my life and I was honest with myself, I could see things that, patterns of my own life that were not very healthy. And I learned along the way and I keep learning along the way. And I think by knowing how to find a way to accept my scars, because our scars remind us where we are,
where we have been, yeah.
But not how, it doesn't have to define our future. And I think when you realize that you have more control over your life, that is empowering. And it's also helps you move forward, because quite often people who have been bullied or have experienced sexual violence, they feel stuck. They feel I'm not good enough. Somehow it's a subconscious thing.
I do wonder sometimes if you don't feel good enough, and whether it's for whatever reason, okay, because there's lots of them we could talk about. Mm-hmm. Does that start to create a, what's it called, self-destructive behavior, your own self-destructive behavior?
Yes, it does. It does. And you don't even, sometimes you don't even recognize it. So how, I have the most amazing husband and we've been together almost 21 years.
Awesome.
But how to get to him, I had to learn how to like who I was. I had to learn how to love me and value and create qualities in me that I wanted in a mate. So honesty, faithfulness, sense of humor, kindness. Mm. Someone who values my voice, and he does all those things. And he's been an awesome stepdad to my daughter all these years. She's like, she's very, very, very close to him. And so I think when we, how we move forward really depends on our attitude and having a positive attitude, finding the silliness in life, laughing, accepting our mistakes without blaming. I mean, that's the worst thing, the shame blame game.
Yeah, I call it blame storming.
Yeah,
right?
And it's,
you can
it's,
do it externally.
It's
or
not
internally.
Productive. It's yeah, not productive. Yeah, it doesn't help you at all. It just, as a matter of fact, it pushes you farther down.
I would think I would openly admit that I'm guilty of blame storming internally, right?
Oh, you know what?
Like if the brain just sort of goes there and it's just like, why? Right. Anyway, yeah, go
Richard,
ahead.
You're right. I think if we were as mean to other people like we are with our little internal dialogue, we wouldn't have any friends.
I know. Yeah, it's that sort of face that you put on sometimes.
You have to be forgiving.
You have to be forgiving. And sometimes it takes, you know what, I understand it takes time. And I think
it does.
Speaking
it does.
Male, female, you know, man, woman, whatever, I think that, you know, I don't think you can really... I don't think there's anywhere really to hide anymore. You know, it's just there. I mean, you can hide it, but I don't think there's anywhere to hide, which is a very different sort of thing.
Well, hiding doesn't work. It's great if you're playing a game. Yeah. And may I just address the tattling and telling?
Oh, sure. The statement I made earlier on.
Yes. And I had, you know, I thought there's a difference between tattling and telling. And I tell this when I'm talking, when I'm presenting, that tattling is getting someone into trouble. Telling is getting them out. That's what bystanders need to understand. When you're telling, you are helping someone get out of trouble, because maybe that bully, that sexual predator, is completely unaware that grabbing someone, pushing them up against the wall, or that inappropriate joke is not appropriate. Sometimes they are completely blind to their own behavior. Sometimes not.
I think, you know what? I think that's an awesome lesson, actually, because I think I referenced it to, as a child on the playground, tattletale, right? And I think that's where that lesson is learned. I don't know about so much today, but, you know, people are people, right? And kids are kids. But telling would be very empowering. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
They can contact me through my website, www.sherrybensonpodolchuk.com.
How do you spell that, Sherry?
Podolchuk.
There you go. Way to spell it. I was not going to go there. What a show. Awesome.
Thank you.
Guest. I got a last question for you, but this is going to be a short one. In about 10 seconds, if you could share a final thought with our listeners, what would it be?
Believe in yourself, to always speak up and speak up for others, to be curious about yourself, patterns of behavior, and perhaps somebody else, because you never know what's going on in their life, and also create your own toolkits for happiness, because no one can make you happy, no one can change you but you.
Awesome. I think that's great advice. And actually, you've provided a ton of advice, and you've given me some eye-openers, too.
You've helped
me redefine a few things, for even for myself. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
You know what? I always like it when I have an awesome guest on. So, Sherry, you're an awesome guest. I feel like you're now my best friend, best friends forever. And I know that we'll be talking again. Listeners, I am so grateful that you tuned in. You know, and if you have a thought, a question, an idea, you can email me at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something, to do your best invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.